And you're listening to the live show.
Blog Talk Radio.
Alrighty. Alright. Excellent. There is my friend. You know, people wanted to know, who is that British lady? And we have to find her. I'm going to get her on one of my shows. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, we're going to get her on. So anyway, this is Alan Levy, and sorry for the little confusion at the beginning. This is the Alan Levy Show on Blog Talk Radio, and I'm here. We're here live tonight. With Derek Gray, who's just back from Iraq, and he's a host, and he's a National Guard soldier. He's a soldier, and he's here. He's also a host on Blog Talk Radio, one of our popular hosts. So I'm very happy to have him back, and he just got back after a tour. And Amy Domestico is with us. So how are you guys tonight?
Great.
Excellent. Every day in America is beautiful.
Excellent, Derek. So how's the, so? What? Let me ask you. By the way, if you'd like to call into the show tonight, it's the call in number is 347-677-0649. It's 347-677-0649. Of course, this is Alan Levy. I'm the founder and CEO and dishwasher and janitor here. Close the shop. Actually, I don't close the lights. Amy tends to close the lights at night.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you for everybody joining us, and it is great to have you here, Derek. What's the first thing you eat when you come back after a tour? And we want to get into what's going on over there, of course. What do you go for, the pizza, steak, or what?
Well, generally, on my last two tours, I want to do the typical. I wanted and did the last two tours. Wanted to do just the absolutely party my butt off and get trashed routine.
Okay.
But this time, I found that, you know, I thought I'd want to do that. I enjoy time alone. Just away from everybody, you know, and just try and readjust to being back here where I don't have to worry about getting shot at on a daily basis.
Okay, that seems like a nice thing, you know. Kind of live your life not having to worry about getting shot at every day.
Well, I mean, adapting to the different environments, going from 100 to 140 degree desert heat that is absolutely bone dry to me being in Texas, Houston heat, 90 degrees, it might as well be 140 degrees, 100% humidity. You know, that takes a little bit of adjustment, just adjusting to the common things that we take for granted, such as the one thing that the moment that I actually found myself pausing at, and I wrote about it in one of my blogs, was where I was taking the trash out, and I looked at the grass and said, you know what, I haven't felt the grass on my feet yet. And I had to mentally pause and prepare myself for that feeling. Because all I've felt is socks, boots, and dirt for the past couple months.
Wow.
And so many things that we simply take for granted are simple treasures over there.
Mm-hmm. Well, now where were you located? Now where were you stationed there? I mean, what part of Iraq were you in?
I'm still kind of, well, technically
well, you can't
I'm
really
not.
Talk about it?
No, I'll say I was north of Baghdad,
okay.
And that's about all I'll disclose for right now.
Okay, fine. Are people, I mean, there's a huge issues up north, right? I heard today that the Turkish army's invading Iraq.
Well, I heard about that as well, but I heard it was like a short-term skirmish for some rebel group. I don't know a lot of details about that, but... I don't know a lot about it, and it wasn't really highly circulated around, so I imagine they went 20 yards into Iraq and then turned around and left.
I see. So,
but okay. the typical media tends to blow things out of proportion.
Well, that's I know we've had this conversation before. It's interesting because the Pentagon has been working with some of our hosts at Blog Talk Radio on doing live shows from the field. I mean, they've been offering up officers, and My Point Radio has had some, Ed Morrissey, Captain's Quarter, CQ Radio has had some, and they're looking to use Blog Talk Radio to help, you know, put a better, you know, try to inform the American public as to what's going on over there. So it's much easier than 20-second sound bites on CNN or Fox.
Well, that and because of the fact that on having military hosts or guests or whatever coming to you live from the theater, just like you're saying, one is we've got a hostile media that is very biased, and the only thing they want to report is the good is the bad news about another dead soldier. They don't want to talk about the hundreds of thousands of great things happening in that country on a daily basis because it doesn't sell. Death, destruction, and chaos sells. Opening of an Iraqi school where young kids, women included, are getting an education, stories about soldiers going to these schools and dropping off school supplies, soccer balls, toys, and things like that, that doesn't sell for two reasons. One, no drama. Two, it is my personal opinion, just strictly me, but I know I'm not alone in this, but I'm only going to speak for myself, that most of the media has an agenda against us. But that, you know, like I said, that's just my opinion.
I don't know. I don't think it's an agenda against the Pentagon, the Department of Defense or the Pentagon. I think there's I think you hit it on the head that there's, you know, the images are easier with these, you know, and for them in that regard. I mean, to explain these stories of rebuilding, again, it's somewhat hard to understand. We're helping to rebuild that nation, right? And that's, you know, was that our primary mission in there? I mean, I don't know. I mean, we don't have to get into the whole story here. But anyway, I think the Pentagon is looking to us to help promote these stories. And it sounds like you on the ground, I mean, before you left, we had you on my show, and you were very much engaged in, very excited to go. You really feel an obligation, and I honor that. I respect that, and I think it's incredible. And now that you're back, has your perspective just, how do you feel now? I mean, what did you see over the last couple of months that's going on over there?
Well, you know, I don't want to try and blow my service, you know, try and speak it up to anything more than it was. You know, I was an inside-the-wire grunt. I didn't go out and run in convoys and facing IEDs, but I did talk to a lot of the soldiers who did. But, however, you know, like I said, this was my third tour over there. And I've got two different tours, one in 05 and one in 06, to compare it to.
Yes.
I've got 27 hash marks on my helmet from my first deployment over there from mortar attacks that landed within 200 yards of me.
Wow.
The second trip over there, I had 47 of those that landed within 200 yards of me. And that was in March of 06, or March, April, May of 06.
We have a caller. Do we want to take a caller yet, or we want to wait?
Well, yeah, take a caller.
You have a caller?
Okay. May I finish this real quick?
Yep,
yeah,
go ahead.
Finish that, and then we'll take a call.
Okay. This tour, I had none.
Wow.
None. And I was in the exact same area that was getting hammered day after day after day that on the previous tours. And this one, nothing. Did we still have attacks? Yes, but were they anything near the past two? Absolutely not.
Okay,
and
good. So after the caller, we speak with a caller. We'll get into what are the reasons that you believe that to be the case.
Okay, 717, you're on the air. Hello?
Oh, is that me?
That's you.
If you're 717, it's you.
Hey, how you doing, Affleck?
Hey.
Hey, it's Outlaw.
Hey, what's going on, buddy?
How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm outstanding.
I'm glad you're back safe.
Gift. Thank you very much.
What can we do for you?
I would like to comment on what you're saying about the border with Turkey.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the skirmish has been going on there for almost centuries. They don't like each other. You know, they've been fighting there for a long time.
Well, I mean,
it's something they do. They come across the border. You know, they go across the border all the time, fighting each other.
It has nothing to do with what
we're doing in Iraq right now.
No, I understand. I fully agree with you. It's just now that the U.S. has a presence there and we're really very big part of this theater, and now you've got another nation coming in into that. So it just makes it complex. I agree. It has nothing to do with what we're doing down there.
Yeah, because that's actually the calmest part in Iraq right now is the northern part.
Well, absolutely.
But what they're doing across the border, that's in between the Turks because of what they're doing. They've always been doing it. They've always been fighting among themselves right there.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for your question. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Have a good night.
Yeah. You too.
Okay.
Bye.
So, Zarek, in your estimation, what do you think? So what you believe is that the insurgency is working? Is it because
the troop surge? You got to be careful about your words
the troop surge, not the insurgency. The surge, the troop surge is working. Is it the troop surge working, or is it that the Iraqi army is starting and government is starting to step up to the task?
A combination of the above. I'm holding in front of me a copy of the Stars and Stripes from when I was over there. And in this article, I don't have the time to read it, obviously, but they say more and more Baghdad tribes, local Sunni and Shia tribal leaders, band up to reject extremism. So finally, now that we've got more troops in there and we're getting better control of the security situation, and they're not, rolling in, secure an area, then roll out, and the terrorists come right back in, because of the fact that we are establishing a permanent security perimeter, and then when it's time for our forces to move on, the Iraqi forces take over, the people there are more willing to talk to our guys and tell them, hey, we got this terrorist turd over here. And that was like, when I was telling you about the attacks that we were having on our base, that is exactly what was going on. That is why there were so few attacks, because they had to really conceal themselves because they knew the people around our base would turn them in if they saw them shooting off mortars and rockets at us.
Mm-hmm.
So it is working. And the, it's working, and if asked to do it again, I'd do it in a heartbeat.
And how do you, curious to see how does the American people gauge that it's working? In other words, of course, if we see these images of, 10 soldiers died this weekend and 48 died in a car suicide bombing in Baghdad, how do these things get communicated effectively? I know it's a big question, and it's one we probably three of us aren't qualified to answer. But
that is my biggest gripe about it, is that it is the responsibility of the media to report the facts, and they don't. I saw news report after news report after news report coming into the Stars and Stripes, our media in Iraq, telling us of how much attacks were down in areas that were normally very hotbed areas. I talked to this one soldier whose primary job was convoy security, and he told me about this one road that they called the Road of Death, because
right.
Every time he'd go take a cruise down that road, they'd get hit with between 5 and 10 IEDs in this one-mile stretch. Well, it's not happening anymore, and that is how you can basically – here's the way that you can gauge it. How many bad stories are there in the media? Because they're not going to talk about the good stories. So all you can do is pay attention to the lack of bad ones.
So then as by natural extension of this, they're having a plan to extricate ourselves from that country, and we'll certainly have some presence, like we even, like we still do in Asia. So do you feel that there could be a path to that, where ultimately we can say, you guys are starting to get this thing organized, and we could reduce our exposure and our participation?
Oh, absolutely. That
right.
is the primary goal right now. Yes, the surge is helping to secure it, but the surge is also increasing the training of Iraqi forces. And as the more and more Iraqi forces stand up, the more Iraqi forces stand up, the more we can stand down.
Right. How many, do you know the numbers here? Like how many, what's about 140,000 U.S. troops or NATO troops, no, U.S. troops or, you know, or
coalition
NATO?
Troops.
Coalition, I'm sorry, coalition, about 140,000?
Right. And that was right before the surge. So I think the goal for the surge was to take it to about 170,000, 180,000.
And how many more Iraqi troops are there? In other words, from the government, you know, the Iraqi own troops.
I don't know how many they've got working right now, but I do know that on the military side they have over 300,000. And that's just talking about the regular army. We're not even talking about the National Guard and the police forces and so on and so forth. And another interesting bit. You know, one thing that a lot of people think when they think about this war, that it's just U.S., Great Britain, and Australia fighting this war. Well, one thing that I would like to spread to everybody else who may happen to be listening to this show is that we have far more countries fighting alongside with us. And real quickly, I would like to go through the names of all those countries.
Well, no, I don't know. We may not have time for all of them.
Oh, okay. No, it's not. Well, I could get through it in about 15 seconds.
Okay.
Albania, Armenia, Australia, I can't even pronounce that one. Azerbaijan, Bosnia, Bulgaria, Czech Republic, Denmark, El Salvador, Estonia, Georgia, Kazakhstan, and about, okay, you're right, too many names. But you get the idea. We're not alone in this fight. And we are going to get it done. And one thing that somebody I was talking to you about before we went on the air, I wanted to play was a soundbite of an Army Ranger who was home on leave 2 days from going back. And he got really emotional and let it out about how disappointed he is about the way our country feels about us. Because one way that we take it, when the politicians here at home tell us we can't do the job, that sounds like an insult to us, because we are the ones risking our lives. Or actually, you know what, I want to step back. I help support those guys outside the wire, out in the field. They're the ones risking their lives. And it's insulting to them to not support them. And it's insane when they're dying, going out there and dying in the least bloody war in all of history, considering what we are accomplishing, and a lot of us feel like we're being betrayed.
Well, you know, I mean, we've had these conversations with Scott Kesterson in Afghanistan, you know, who was a embedded photojournalist, and he's back now, and he was, you know, he's of course a huge supporter of the soldiers, and we would do these shows and he'd get on and talk about it, and then he'd get back into the barracks and they'd all give him standing ovations because they were listening to the shows. Is Block Talk Radio, can you hear the show, can you get on computers or laptops over there? I mean, what's the situation like that for that?
It really depends on where your station. Now, I was at a fairly large base, and we had internet cafes that we could get onto MySpace and Blog Talk Radio and so on and so forth. And some of the people, mostly those who were there for 6 months, a year, or 15 months, as some of them have been extended to, some of them have internet access. But, you know, it really varies based on where you are. Obviously, the bigger the base, the more amenities that you have.
Right. So I guess the soldiers can listen to Blog Talk Radio shows and participate and, you know, listening to them and enjoying it. I mean, there's a lot of mill bloggers on Blog Talk Radio, actually, that are talking about the war and support of the effort by the soldiers.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's because... It doesn't matter what, you know. Yeah, I like to rag on the opposing party. You know, I'm a big conservative, independent conservative, and I can't stand the opposite of me. But I don't care who the president is and what they're – I don't care if they have an R or a D after their name. When they give orders to accomplish a mission, it becomes our life to accomplish that mission the way that they put it. I know many, many lifelong hardcore Democrats who are in the military, and they don't even understand what's going on with their own party because of the fact that they're in the military and they feel like their party's betraying them. And, you know, like I said, I'm trying to stay off the politics of it. You know, that's what I do on my regular show. But it doesn't matter who sent what the mission is. Hey, when y'all talk about phase redeployment out of Iraq, as they do, why don't we pull out of Bosnia and Herzegovina and Kosovo? Because you know what? Clinton sent us there. We're still there 10 years later.
Well, what kind of presence do we have there, though?
About 40,000.
Well, we're in, we remain in you know many of the countries that right that we've occupied not occupied but where we've where the theater's been and
usually have to remain as a stabilizing force and mostly in support of the democratic government or whatever government is established there. Yes,
right.
And we don't do it as a means of like imposing our will upon the country, but more as a means of ensuring that we don't have to leave and come back again.
Mm-hmm. And what do the Iraqi people in your conversations, and you must have had a lot of conversations with people on the ground, what do they? How do they view the American soldier?
Well, it depends on who you're talking to. I didn't really get any opportunities to go out and talk to any Iraqi civilians, but most of my opinions come from speaking to other outside-the-wire soldiers. And
now, why wouldn't you have an opportunity to speak to – I mean, where you were you just on a base and, you know, and just
– Because it wasn't necessary for me. You know, we usually stick to mission essential, and it wasn't necessary, and it is dangerous for me to go off the base.
Right.
So, you know, they would keep me confined to where I would accomplish my mission. Now, if for some reason or another, I'd have to go to another base, obviously I'd do that, but they try and keep that to a minimum to ensure that I'm safe and I can perform my mission. Now,
but when
my
you
mission,
say that, when you said the bombs weren't hitting you this time or weren't within 200 yards of you, you mean in your prior tours, your bases were getting bombarded.
Right, we were being hit by rockets and mortars, generally fired anywhere from 1 mile to 3 miles away, depending on the size of the mortar or rocket and how they launched them. Mm-hmm. So these were all indirect fire attacks.
Right.
It's not like somebody was looking through a sniper scope and pulling a trigger. These are guys who drive out on the road, know, hey, there's an American base in that general direction. They pull out, lob a couple mortars or launch a couple rockets, and then take off. Because the minute they launch those rockets, we're coming for them. They know we can pick them up. We can pick them up on radar, and we're coming for them.
Right.
They don't stick around. And I've seen many upon many of occasions where our superior technology has caught them in the act. And we go after them, and we either take them out on the spot or we follow them to gather further intel.
Now, who are these people? Have you witnessed some of these, arrests, or well, you've brought these people in, that these insurgents that have been shooting on us, and you know, who are they?
Basically, if I'm to bring it down to, if I was to give them one very generic name, radical Islamists. That's
well, that
pretty
is
much
very
all there
generic,
is to it.
By the way.
What's that?
That is very generic.
And that is pretty much...
Are they Sunni? Are they Shia? You know, what's happening? I mean, there's a big, a lot of... You know, obviously
only, the when it comes, there's really so many different divisions between them. Yeah, they're Sunni. Yeah, they're Shia. But a lot of that Sunni and Shia is pushed aside when it comes to killing Americans if they are the believers of the radical sect of Islam. a lot of that Sunni Shia stuff goes away, and their only uniting factor is killing us.
Right.
But, you know, it's basically terrorists. That's who they are. And that's really all there is to it. They are there to kill Americans or anybody else who
infidels.
Does not believe in their particular sect of radical Islam.
Right. They're infidel. They're killing the infidels.
And speaking of which, the greatest victims in Iraq are not American forces, but innocent Iraqis who do not follow their belief system. You know, you'll hear about time after time after time about a car bomb going off in a busy market. Do you or anybody in America imagine going to any of our hundreds of malls and just be shopping for something and somebody yell out, yell out Allah Akbar, press a button and blow themselves up? No, we simply can't imagine that because, we all have our different belief systems, but most of us, 99.99999% of us, will not kill somebody just because they don't believe the same way we do.
Right, and of course, I mean, that's the threat of radical Islamic faith that's, you know, Osama bin Laden-like. I mean, that's, and his crew, you know, and so the government, I mean, again, it's a very complicated world, particularly in that part of the world.
Oh, absolutely, and that is why it is so important for us to finish the job, because eventually these radical sects will be run out of the country. And I can tell you right now, this war would have been over 2 years ago if it wasn't for the two neighboring countries, Iran and Syria.
Right. I was just going to ask you about Iran. What's happening now with Iran? And do you hear about their influence more and more over there?
I'm confined to what I've heard in the media, but I do know certain things, and I will say the media reports are accurate. But obviously, for security reasons, I got to bite my tongue on a lot of it.
Right, I see. Well, now what are your plans? You're here now for what, the summer, and then you're going back, or what is your plan?
Well, basically, I'm here until the next time.
Mm-hmm.
And if presented the opportunity to volunteer, I will take it. It doesn't look like I'll be quote unquote ordered to go back anytime soon.
I see.
But my belief in the cause, my belief in the war, and mostly my love and respect for those outside the wire who are facing that compels me, out of a sense of duty, to want to go back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there are certain benefits to it. I get paid a little bit extra. But trust me, $250 a month does not make up for the idea, for the feeling of grass under your feet. The ability to get up out of my bed and walk 5 yards to my own bathroom. The ability to rinse my mouth out after I brush my teeth with water coming out of the faucet. Not having to carry a 2-liter or a 1-liter bottle of water around with me at all times, because the most common thing that injures us is dehydration. And the constant ominous fear of that alarm going off announcing that we've got an incoming mortar and rocket, and that you've got about between 2 and 10 seconds to either get in a bunker or kiss dirt.
Right.
But I still believe in it. And we are winning. And that is one message that I want to send to everybody, is don't give up. Since when has America been about losing? And speaking of that...
Well, I don't think... I mean, we're not going to get into all the politics. I don't think people are talking about losing necessarily. I think part of it is, you know, that this is a government that should begin to fend for itself and control these, control these suicide attempts and these insurgent uprisings.
Well, right, but see...
Right? I mean, that's what you want.
you are absolutely right, but you got to remember, we are fighting ghosts. Today is June 6th, the anniversary of D-Day invasion. Germany, Nazi Germany, was an atrocious enemy who committed all kinds of war crimes, mostly having to do with the Holocaust. But they still followed the basic rules of war, such as wearing a uniform, not engaging civilians, wearing uniforms, carrying their arms openly, engaging in what we call a lawful war. We have to wear our uniforms and our body armor and carry our weapons openly, where they get to blend in to the crowd with a pistol tucked into their waistband or a bomb vest concealed underneath their shirt, and they get to walk up to us, take a pot shot or a suicide attack, and then disappear. And that is why it is so difficult, is because of the fact that we are fighting a brutal, brutal enemy that is a ghost. And I am a firm believer in the ideology that it is better to be fighting him over there than to be fighting him over here.
The one thing that I remember that Scott Kesterson always said was he couldn't believe the hate that they had. That's all they knew was hate.
Oh, absolutely. Because like I said, I want to stress, I'm talking about the radical sect.
Right, right, yeah.
You know, 98% of Muslims, or actually I'd say probably more like 90%, probably more. I hope it's 90%, but they are peaceful people who want to live a regular life.
Mm-hmm.
But those who are a member of the radical sect have been taught since the age of 3 that Jews or kafirs, non-believers, are apes and pigs, and it is the duty of Muslims to slaughter them, to kill or convert. And, you know, definitely one thing I've used on my shows often is the intro audio from, oh gosh, I'm having a mental blank.
Derek, listen to me. The only way that I understand, and I've, you know, very learned in this area, but I will say that the only way it's resolved is by the centrists, the moderates within the Islamic community. There's 1.3 billion of Islams and Muslims,
right,
in the world. They've got it. They cannot allow a few to hijack their religion.
Absolutely.
And if it happened in Catholicism, it happened in Judaism, there's just no way that the centrist organizations would allow this to occur. That this is the problem. And until, because they're in fear, right? They can't.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. And so it's a very complicated set of circumstances, and ones that, you know, would be, fill up hours and hours of conversation. And
right.
So, but anyway, I want to thank you for coming on our show tonight.
It was a pleasure.
It was a great being here, and you're doing shows again on Blog Talk Radio. I understand. When are you doing your show?
You know, most of the time I do it Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, on various political topics, usually having to do with the war. You know, I am a hardcore conservative, and that's the pulpit that I speak from. But I speak for myself, obviously. You know, I don't want to try and say that I speak for all of the military, otherwise I'll get in trouble. But yeah, that's when I do it, and I mostly wanted to make sure that I do my show to honor my guys and my fellow brothers and sisters in arms still over there serving.
Well, it's a very noble effort, and thank you for your time there, and thank you to the soldiers in Iraq as well, and not just Iraq, but all over the world who are fighting on our behalf, right, for our freedom, and we certainly appreciate that here.
Absolutely.
So thanks for joining us. You've been listening to the Alan Levy Show. Amy, thank you.
Thank you.
And, you know, this has been a very enlightening time, and once again, thanks for joining us, and have a good evening.